Well, even if you have just a small patch of garden space, or maybe even just room for a few pots on a patio or a balcony, you may love planting veggies every year. And it can be really satisfying to plant seeds or maybe just have the plants themselves and tend to them. And if you end up with some succulent tomatoes or maybe some delicious salad greens, all the better. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Pleased to have back John Hendrickson, who is with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at the University of Wisconsin. He's the program manager for fresh market vegetables and food systems, and is also the coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. And John, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
This is a kind of a fun time of the year in some ways, because there's not a lot of work. But there's a lot of anticipation, and there's almost the time I haven't started yet to receiving any catalogs, but that can't be far off.
I've already gotten a few.
Oh no!
Yeah, it seems like they get a little bit earlier each year, and it feels like there's maybe some competition among the seed companies to get their catalog out earliest, so you can get the eyes of your customers the earliest.
Well, I tell you what, it's going to be a lot of fun once they do come for me, because I really enjoy looking through them and trying to think about my garden and what I'm going to put in it and how I'm going to plant it out. And planning it is important.
It absolutely is. And, you know, you were saying that there's not as much work to do right now. And certainly the pace of work, if you're a vegetable grower or a gardener, is much slower right now. But the work is actually really, really important. In some ways,
yeah.
The most important, because making a good plan and selecting your varieties and the quantities and when you're going to plant things can be the difference between having a successful year the next year or not.
Yeah, and I think there are a lot of people, and myself, I can think of when I was first getting going in gardening, I just throw everything in the garden on, all right, today I'm going to plant the garden. I planted everything and...
I think that's pretty common for people to have that, this is the weekend we're going to put our garden in. So you go out and you rent the rototiller from the hardware store or whatever and put everything in all at once. That kind of ignores the fact that there might be times that are better to put certain crops in the ground, some that would be better to put in earlier, some that could be better to put in later, some that you can put in the ground multiple times and have, enjoy a longer period of harvest from your garden.
We have a caller online. By the way, you can join in with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Facebook page titled, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's take a call from Mark in Marinesco, Michigan. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, guys. Well, last year I put a garden in. I live on a lake, solar power, no running water and such, but and all that, big deal on that. But I bought this airport across the lake, and it's grass, and put in a garden. It took me 3 weeks with a hand rototiller that I bought, just rototilled up. I started and got a few plants, you know, a dozen of this, broccoli, tomato, cauliflower, cabbage, blah, blah, blah. But I ended up, after buying them all, and I kind of planned it out and stuff in varieties, grabbed some of these, grabbed some of them from here and there, ranch gardens and jungs and this, and bring them back. And I ended up with 158 tomato plants and stuff, and I ended up giving all this stuff away, and that's what I kind of plan on doing in the future. But what I'm wondering is there a place, I'm building a garden house, greenhouse and stuff, but is there a place where I can get some bulk of everything for this year? So I'm not so.
Yeah. So you and when you're talking bulk, Mark, are you talking like 100 tomato plants or more?
Yeah, like 100 tomato plants, 100 broccoli, 100.
Okay. Well,
I don't know where to buy them in Walmart. How much money did I spend last year? Oh, my God.
Well, John, what have you got for Mark here?
Well, I would say the first thing to do is to perhaps look at your local area for farms that are, there's a lot of vegetable farms that will also grow transplants and sell those either at a farmer's market, or they may even be interested in hearing from you now and what crops you want and in what quantities. And, you know, you can set up a little bit of a contract and have a grower grow exactly what you want, the varieties that you want and the quantities, and when do you want them. And working with a local grower like that would probably provide the best customer service for you in terms of getting what you want. A lot of the seed companies do offer plants these days as well. So some of the same seed companies that you order seeds from, many of those will sell you plants as well. Now, if you order from a seed company, they're going to be shipped in a box, and you're going to have to pay that cost, which is why another reason why I might encourage you to work with a local grower. When I saw your call coming in, I thought of some local farms here that I know of, but of course they're in here in Wisconsin, so they're not going to be doing much good over there in Michigan.
That's okay. I went down all the way to Milwaukee and stuff for an early baseball game, and all the way back, I stopped everywhere and bought something here, there, everywhere.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Actually, that sounds kind of like fun. But you can, you know, I would go. One thing you could do if you don't know of growers right in your area, you don't know the names of them, if you go to your county, Michigan County Extension office,
yeah,
the horticulture person there is going to know exactly the names,
okay,
and contacts, and you just put a phone call into them, and you're probably going to,
yeah,
be able to find that. And as John says, you can just order them. Just say, hey, can you plant me 100 tomatoes of some certain variety or whatever, and then just pick them all up at once.
Yeah. I talked to a gal one time, and I don't know, she didn't give me a whole lot of information and all that from the co-op, but I'm going to give her another call back. The one thing, I'm up here in Ironwood, and we have an old Ironwood theater up here, and there was a fellow from Milwaukee that was coming up that somehow he does, like, urban gardening and stuff, a color, a sportsman, but he couldn't come because he had to go with over to Italy with Mrs. Michelle Obama.
Oh, I know who you're...
talking about Will Allen.
You're talking about Will Allen. I know exactly who you're talking about. Well, Mark?
One thing I would just add is when you're looking for a local farm to grow these plants for you, I make sure and ask lots of questions about how long they've been doing it, and
yeah,
you know, maybe ask for some references so you make sure to get good plants.
That's for sure. Good luck. I think you're on the right track now, Mark. Appreciate your call. John in Janesville has a question. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call.
That's good. I put in tomatoes last year in my garden, and they cracked down the sides and then got those little bugs in them and turned brown right away. So I was wondering what made them do that, or should I not plant tomatoes for a year or two just to...
Well, most often cracking is caused by... too much variation in how much water they're getting. So if they go through a big dry spell and then suddenly you get a lot of rain, or suddenly decide, hey, you know, it's dry, I've got to irrigate, and you put a bunch of water on them. So they need real consistent amounts of water, an inch or two a week.
Okay.
Yeah, and if it's, I think John's exactly right. And that also, if you can keep a consistent watering regimen, you're going to avoid some diseases at the end, like blossom end rot, that is always the result, almost always the result of inconsistent watering, I guess.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
There you go.
Yeah, the cherry tomatoes did good, but everything else,
yeah,
I put in 10 different kinds of tomatoes, and I was like, okay, the rest of them did terrible.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
I think your key is to do more consistent watering. And when you're watering, it's really best to just put the water on the ground and not use an overhead sprinkler, because a lot of the diseases in tomatoes are because the foliage gets wet. And so if you can apply the water at the base of the plants, so, you know,
yep,
you can use there's various types of products that will drip tape or soaker hoses, those kinds of things will get the water where you want it, which is to the roots rather,
yep,
than on the leaves.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at the vegetable garden and planting that garden today, and maybe answering some questions about what went wrong last year, or what, as we just did, or what good experience you had. We'd love to hear about that as well. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Ryan from Milton called in and for bulk plants recommended a company called Bonnie Plants located in Milton. They supply lots of sort of for Ace Hardware and you know, businesses like that. So they produce a lot of plants.
That's, yeah, I'm aware of that. There's several other companies that will ship transplants as well. One of the advantages of working with a smaller local farm is that you can get, you know, maybe you can pick the exact mm-hmm. variety that you'd like them to grow for you, as opposed to not knowing what varieties you're getting or having a more limited selection.
Yep. Very good points. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call. You talked about plant, before we go back to the phones, you talked about a planting schedule. What's the best way to do that, create that?
Well, if you're a person like me who's addicted to spreadsheets, you
why not?
You use a Excel spreadsheet and come up with a plan. Of course, it's also possible to do that paper and pencil as well. There's a certain information that you're going to need, and that information is, you know, and most seed catalogs will supply most of this. The days to maturity for the different crops that you're going to plant, so you know, mm-hmm. you know, when they're going to come, when you're going to be harvesting those tomatoes or beans, what have you. You need to know your first and last frost dates so that you have an idea of when the plant should be planted. And then using that information, you can do a lot just with those three pieces of information, the days to maturity, the frost-free dates for your area, and then you can make a schedule. There's various guides that will tell you, you know, put your tomatoes in, you know, 1 to 2 weeks after the average last frost date, you know, frost-free date.
I think most of us put them in too early. I shouldn't say most of us, but many people would.
I would agree. It's hard to hold yourself back sometimes. And I think a lot of people who grow their own tomato transplants often plant their seeds a little bit too early, and their tomatoes get long and leggy. And kind of straggly because and it's really best for most vegetable crops in the garden to have a nice, consistent growth pattern. They don't want to be held back or go into, you know, any kind of stress situation. So I think it's better to hold off and plant them a little bit later mm-hmm. so that they don't get held back.
And especially another plant that I've only once planted too early, and I've never did that again, was peppers. Peppers are really, if you plant them too early and you get a little cold spot, they're just not going to produce.
Well, and peppers,
they're worse than tomatoes.
Well, and peppers are very finicky.
Yeah.
They can be very finicky, especially with temperature fluctuations. They'll drop their flowers.
Yep. Learned that lesson. Oh, man. Dave and Stanley, your turn next. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, a couple callers ago was calling and asking about buying in bulk tomatoes, all varieties of vegetables and plants. We've got a place up, it's around Stanley Thorpe area. It's just outside of Chippewa Falls. And the Amish and Mennonites, they have all their greenhouses. And you can actually go, they have an auction house 3 days a week, and you actually bid. And you walk through the area and you pick out, all right, I want tomato plants or I want whatever kind of vegetable that you want. And you buy it by the bulk by actually pallets. You bid on one pallet, and that pallet may have 100 plants on it.
Wow.
And so we get together with family members and we buy, you know, whatever we're interested in. And they do trees, they do everything. And the prices are, you know, just slash compared to what you actually pay. And you get a lot of the local, even people coming out of Milwaukee that have their own nurseries, and they buy it from them, bring it back home, and sell the product.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'd never heard of that, Dave. Thank you so much for calling.
Auctions are actually a very common way for the Amish and Mennonite community to sell their products because You know, they're not in the business of getting in trucks and driving yeah. things. And so what they do is they hold auctions and the customer, have the customers come
to
them rather than deliver the product themselves. That's
right.
how a lot of vegetables are sold by the Amish and Mennonite communities as well. The auction, there's auctions in Ohio and Pennsylvania and there's at least four or five in Wisconsin. And
yeah.
I don't know if for the grower in Michigan where he was calling from, I don't know if there's auction
there's one up there or not.
Or not, but he could look into that.
Yeah. Thanks again, Dave.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And more callers online. I guess, you know, before we go back to that, it's sort of, here we've got this Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers, and, you know, does a topic like that ever come up in that school?
Oh, sure. You know, when you're starting a business growing vegetables, there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And some of our growers, our grower instructors that teach the class actually feel like it's not a bad thing for a new grower to buy their plants in the beginning before they, you know, invest
yeah.
money in a greenhouse and learn about growing plants in a greenhouse. Why not buy your plants from an experienced grower as you're learning the business and getting started? So
that makes a lot of sense. And what else is covered at that?
It's more what isn't covered, Larry.
Yeah.
It's a 3-day program, and we try to give people a really clear picture of everything they're going to need to know to start and run a successful business growing and marketing vegetables.
Yeah.
So we talk about this whole planning piece that we've been talking about here today, planning the garden, soils, rotations, fertility.
You name it.
The post-harvest handling, washing the product, packing the product, marketing.
Whether and when is this is?
Well, it's coming up, Larry. It's January 8, 9, and 10, 2016.
And is it sold out, or can people still?
No, we still have space. We still have room.
So people, how do they? How does somebody interested get a hold of you or get signed up?
Well, they could certainly call me at 608-265-3704. You can go to the webpage for our organization, Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. We can link to that from your page, Larry. Probably the link might already be there, actually.
Yeah,
or just a simple, you know, internet search for Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. We'll carry you there.
And a small fee, really, when you figure 3 days.
It's $325 for the 3-day program.
Yeah,
you get lunch every day, and you learn a lot.
Learn an awful lot. Danny in Lake Geneva, we'll get to you in just a second. A reminder, though, that John Hendrickson, our guest, is with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, program manager for Fresh Market Vegetables and Food System, and coordinates that Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. I'm Larry Mueller. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer today, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next week on Garden Talk, we're going to find out how to keep your houseplants thriving as we talk with the author of a new book called The Indestructible Houseplant. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, visiting with John Hendrickson about your vegetable garden and looking ahead to 2016, the garden in 2016. We can also look back to the garden of 2015, the vegetables. And certainly, if you have a question, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got some great vegetable gardening photos, put them up on our Facebook page. We'd love to see those. Now let's go to Danny in Lake Geneva. Danny, thank you for calling.
I bought some Bonnie yellow tomatoes on closeout right at the end of the July.
Yeah.
Put them into a big planter, and because I bought them late, they got out late. They didn't start shooting tomatoes until the end of September. And so when it got cold, I just brought the whole thing in the house and put it in a sunny window. And the tomatoes are dwindling now, and the plants look like they're dying. Are they? Do annuals die whether it's warm all year round or not?
Yeah, well, of course, most. There's a whole lot of vegetable plants that are annuals here in Wisconsin because of our of our climate. We have this thing called winter. In tropical areas, some of those plants just keep growing. You can have pepper plants in the tropics that are, you know, as big as a hedge and just keep producing. Now, with tomatoes, you know, as the days get shorter and, you know, certainly even though it's in a south-facing window in your house, it's just not getting the day length it needs to be convinced to keep growing and thriving. And so it will just peter out.
Would a grow light keep them going then?
I actually use one for Limey, my lime tree, and Limey does great, and you got a whole several limes on her right now. I think it can help, but it's not going to replace, you know, direct sun.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'd give it a shot. I mean, if you've got some grow lights, why not?
It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
There you go. It was fun while it lasted.
And actually,
it gave Larry an excuse to bring up Limey, which he loves to talk about.
I love to talk about Limey because Limey provides me with a lot of limes. Anyway, I think of a grow light, I'd probably, if you're going to do that next year, Danny, I think I'd put the grow light on right away when I first got the plant inside. So look, you're not going to bring it back now. I think that's...
Okay. Can I ask you another quick question?
Sure.
How old is Limey? I'm in a lime plant for 3 years and it hasn't shot a lime yet.
Oh, too bad for you. Limey's been producing limes from the first year, actually. I think after about a year producing limes and has been producing limes since then. And Limey's probably 4 or 5 years old now, something like that.
All right, great.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. And if Coco, the cat, doesn't knock the limes off with her paws, I've eaten limes that are, you know, maybe the twice the size of a marble just because the cat knocked them off. And I thought, oh, what the heck? I opened them up and they're the lime that tastes good anyway. But why not? And then I put the limes down the sink and turn on the
disposal.
And then you get a nice smell on the disposal from the rind. Patty in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Last year I used some pine straw mulch that I raked up from my yard. And then I was reading and I heard that might not be the best thing to use in a vegetable garden. Is that true or is that just a myth?
Was it straw mulch, did you say?
It was pine.
Oh, pine.
Oh, so pine needles?
Oh, pine straw, as they call it in Gulf. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So pine needles.
Yeah, the pine needles are going to be acidic, and so not something that you'd want to use large quantities of on a real regular basis.
Okay.
But once you put some in, not gonna
be okay.
No.
So from now on,
it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort to change soil dramatically in terms of the pH.
Yeah.
Okay.
And other characteristics, but not something that I would necessarily recommend doing if you've got a source of, you know, leaves or grass clippings or hay or straw from a local farm. That would be better.
Yep.
Okay. But good for the blueberries, though, right?
Absolutely.
You bet.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Patty. Ah, that's one thing I wish I could grow. I would love to have. I never have any luck with blueberries. And for good reason. To be perfectly honest, I'm trying to grow blueberries where they shouldn't grow. Daniel in Northeast Iowa, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just like to share an experience that I had. It was a mistake that ended up being a good thing. I got a little excited last year and planted a couple cherry tomatoes too early. And I had them under artificial light in the house, and they ended up getting a little too tall, and I decided to try taking a cutting off of the top and just planting that, and they ended up, I got over 600 cherry tomatoes between two plants.
All right.
And you counted every one?
I bet you did.
I tried to, you know, count how many I got so I could try and beat that next year, but it got to be quite a bit of counting, so I kind of gave up. But I quit at 600, so it was a pretty good deal.
Oh, man, that is very cool. And so what did you do? How did you do it? People are going to say, well, how did he do that?
I don't remember exactly. I mean, I just sort of looked up online, you know, how to take cuttings off tomatoes. But I just used a razor blade and cut. I don't remember. I took the top and then one of the suckers off.
Yeah.
And both of them grow pretty well. And I just took the top, maybe 6 inches or something.
Yeah.
And planted it in some peat moss and perlite and vermiculite.
Yeah.
And then kept it nice and humid. It was in the basement under light, so it was nice and humid there. So they ended up rooting really well. So
you potted the cutting and then transplanted
later.
Yeah,
I planted them directly into the soil. Yep.
Yep.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Daniel.
Yeah.
So if you did plant your tomatoes too early and they get all long and leggy, here's a good solution.
Yeah.
It worked really well for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And it forced you to plant later.
Because
you had to wait for that cutting to root.
Yeah, you had to wait for it to root.
It was kind of nice. It just kind of, you know, didn't get any taller for a little while, but that's kind of what I wanted out of it. So.
Yeah, and so remember when you planted and the time, the date was that.
And I really like to put in a late planting of cherry tomatoes because it's nice to have a good supply of cherry tomatoes when the kids go back to school because it's an easy thing to put in the school lunches.
Yeah, and you know, and I've mentioned this on the air before, but I have a cherry tomato plant right next to the back door. And so when you walk in or walk out, Emily or myself will just grab a couple and there's a little snack on your way in and out of the house. I like to do that.
I do that as well.
Daniel, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call very much. And we have more callers? Yeah, we have another caller here. You can join in, by the way. Have an open line, though, at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Cheryl in Verona next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
So I have a timing question as well. In 2015, I would say my very large and assorted vegetable garden harvested everything way too early. My cauliflower and broccoli, everything was done in August. And I'm wondering, I was using the sort of a general calendar. I do some stuff with started plants, some from seed. Some things started around Mother's Day and then the rest after Memorial Weekend. And just wondering if it was an unusual year in terms of really ideal weather for growing or if I should just start my calendar later, start planting later.
When did you plant, though, the broccoli and cauliflower in August?
Yeah, those things I believe those were around Mother's Day timing, and those are from started plants that I did in a grow area in my basement and moved out into a little greenhouse. So they got a pretty early start. And then the tomatoes and those other plants were around after Memorial Weekend.
Okay. Broccoli and cauliflower are cool season crops that do best when the weather is cool. And while you can plant them in the spring and get an early summer crop, they actually, for the absolute best results for cauliflower and broccoli, it's best to plant in July.
Oh,
so you can enjoy that broccoli and cauliflower in September and October.
Okay. All right, that really does help. And would that be true of, say, Brussels sprouts and the other cabbage plants?
Certainly cabbage. Brussels sprouts needs a fairly long season to do its thing because it's such a big plant.
Okay.
But if you a reliable seed catalog with good days to maturity and planting recommendation information should give you some pointers.
And
definitely gear that to your first frost and last frost dates, as I was mentioning earlier in terms of planting.
Yep. Okay, and one more quick question. So the squash and my pie pumpkins, which I plant at the same time from seed, those are ready in August and obviously way too early to enjoy with Thanksgiving. So is that just, if I'm in a really good, warm, sunny spot, is there a chance that just everything is going to be early? This is a new place for me. So is it possible that it's just a little better condition for growing?
That certainly could be the case. And
okay.
It's, you know, it can take some time to get to know your garden plot.
Okay.
And when to plant things best. Now, of course, things can really vary from year to year as well. And last year was a fairly exceptional year in terms of in terms of the weather.
Okay.
And so I would plant things later this coming year. But
okay.
I wouldn't go dramatically. You know, I wouldn't change things too dramatically.
Okay. All right, great. All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Brett in Hurley, Wisconsin, up next. Hi, Brett. Thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to the show, and I hear you talking about planting tomato plants too early and then getting long and lanky. Well, I used to have that problem. You know, I always started my plants in a heated garden shed.
Yep.
With just lights it was like a little barn, lights in the bottom hip and, you know, 8-foot fluorescent in the ceiling. Did a little research because I didn't like that, and I always started my plants in May 1st. So that's plenty, you know, real early.
Yeah.
And I found that if you just add light, you can get healthy, thick stock plants that aren't long and lanky. When what I did is I hung 4-foot fluorescents right over top of the plants when they come up and put them on chains that are adjustable so I could keep moving them up and keep them real close to the plant. And doing that, I was getting plants that are like a foot tall with stalks as thick as a dime.
Yep, you got the right method. If you're growing under lights, you need those lights an inch or two above those plants. And
it made all the difference.
Absolutely. And having a system, whether it's the lights are on the chains or you've got a way to move the plants up and down, those lights need to be basically right on top because the lights coming out of a fluorescent bulb are not the same intensity of the sun. And so that's why they have to be so close.
Yep.
Yeah, I also use a combination of blue and red lights to get a better spectrum to help, too.
Yep, that's good advice as well.
Yeah.
Those would produce, by the end of this summer, that was producing 40 plants, about 2 to 3 bushels a week.
Good for you.
Good advice. Before I had my farm and with a greenhouse, I grew plants under lights, and that was the method that I used. I still found, though, at some point realized that I was starting my tomatoes just too early. And I needed to push it back.
Need to start a little
bit. Even though I was doing the method that you described, which is the right way to do it.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I have a friend, and maybe I've mentioned this on the show before. I'm sure I probably have, who bought an old boat hoist, an old one that wasn't working anymore, and took the guts out of the middle, and then you're left with this nice frame, which he then put a thick plastic over, and there's voila, he has the greenhouse and he could start his plants a lot earlier in that greenhouse. And he's Chuck Johnson. He's had wonderful, wonderful results in his garden every single year. But I thought that was such a cool idea. And he didn't pay very much for that hoist either, I'll tell you that. Nick in Milwaukee emailed, my mom can't move the way she used to, so we'd like to build her some waist-high planting beds for flowers and shrubs. These would be like very tall raised beds from the ground up, filled from the ground up, not just tabletop planters, and she doesn't want straw bales. Should they be filled with just soil? Or would you use layers of soil with other materials like stone? I don't know that I'd... So they're going to be filling it. Sounds like there is something maybe going to go 4 feet high at least. And they want to fill the whole thing up with something. And they're saying, what should we use? Should we use soil and stone or other materials?
It certainly would probably be good to put a layer of gravel in as a base.
Yeah.
And then start adding soil. A lot of the vegetable crops that you're going to grow, you know, don't need a full 4 or 5 feet for their root system. So, again, it's going to depend on what you're planning to grow in those raised beds. But, you know, plants like lettuce and things like that, those roots don't go deep at all. I don't have any direct experience building a raised bed that high.
I don't know why you'd have to fill them up with. So I mean, I would. You could put a raised bed up, but I would maybe only have a foot and a half of, or so.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But that first layer of being gravel would be helpful for drainage.
The bottom layer. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And I don't know either. Furthermore, that I'm not sure. Would you use all soil? Use actual soil?
If you've got good quality soil on your location, okay, it wouldn't hurt.
All right.
But you could certainly amend that with some, you know, good quality compost-based potting mixes.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Let's turn to Wayne in Ascov, Minnesota. Hi, Wayne. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
I just had a couple of comments. The gentleman a couple before me kind of went over what I do. One thing, I've got a Myers, dwarf Myers lemon tree. I bought this spring by mail order.
Uh-huh.
And right now it has 6 lemons on it. And just this last week, it's just in the house in front of a picture window. And it opened up. It has about 50 buds on that thing right now. It's doing so good. I can't believe it being in the house here. And the other thing was, I wanted to just go over, I've been in Minnesota for a couple of years now, but I've been all over, like, garden all my life. I'm not an expert, but I fool around. And the last 2 years up here, I start my tomatoes and peppers. I'm a tomato and pepper guy.
Yeah.
I like tomatoes and peppers. And I grow a lot of heirloom plants. And I start about 75 tomatoes and about 50 pepper plants. And I start them the end of February because I'm bored, or the 1st of March. And I start them in 128-cell starting trays. And I put them, after they sprouted, I put them under the fluorescent lights like the other gentleman did. And I keep them about an inch off the plants. I get them on strings that I can adjust the height. And I have to keep potting them up because I start them so early. But this year here was an exceptional year, I think. But I have a small greenhouse, a 12 by 20, and they go out there around April, and they're usually by that time I've got the tomatoes in like 1 gallon pots. And this year here we picked our first tomato, which was I think an early girl, the first week of June. Ripened, and that was in the greenhouse, and we had so many tomatoes and peppers. I had an ancho pepper plant that was in my greenhouse. I left it in the greenhouse. I had put a lot outside and some inside, and the ancho pepper plant, I thought I could keep it going, but I lost it about 3 weeks ago. It was about 5 feet tall and still had, it was blooming and putting out peppers. Up until that real cold snap we had and killed it. But.
Oh, man. Well, there's a good gardener for you, John.
Yeah, he said he just messed around a little bit, but I think he's doing more than just, I think he was being a little bit...
Man, oh man!
Modest about how seriously you're into this, and especially if you've got a small, you know, what's 12 by 20 greenhouse, that's a good amount of growing space. And, you know, his comment about the peppers, what I was getting back to, you know, peppers are annuals here, but they're not annuals other places. I remember getting a trivia question, what's the only, you know, perennial vegetable plant? And my answer to that is it depends on where you're living. You know?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
The answer is asparagus, you know, for us.
Yeah.
But, you know, a pepper plant will just keep growing if you live in the right place.
Yeah. We had pepper plants the year-round in Trinidad where I spent some time. Oh, my gosh. Well, Wayne, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. And, send us a shot of your garden, of that greenhouse when you've got all those plants going. I would love to see that. Put it up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, and you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with John Hendrickson from the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers and the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at UW-Madison. Talking vegetable gardening today with him, and boy, lots of callers online. You know, there was a question earlier about raised beds not too long back, And I see Stella in Sturgeon Bay has something about those raised beds, the waist-high raised beds. Stella, are you there?
Yes, yes. My husband has built over the last couple years, he's built four raised beds in our garden. Two of them are 40 feet long by 4 feet wide by 2 feet high, and the newest ones are 28 feet long by 4 feet wide by 2 feet high. They're built out of decking, treated lumber, like 2x4s for decks, for making decks.
Okay.
And what we did with the first ones, which was, it was kind of a serendipitous discovery, the first ones were built next to a cedar hedge, and so to prevent the roots of the cedars growing into the beds and just taking over the beds, we lined them with a pond liner.
Yep.
And then they're filled about two-thirds full with washed sand, and then the top is filled with the soil that we removed in order to build the beds.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could go higher than we've gone. If you're going large like we have, you need to have about, it's about every 2 feet or maybe 3 feet. There's a we do a stainless steel cable about mid height in the box to hold them together, because otherwise they tend to bow out.
Yep.
And about 6 inches from the bottom on both ends, there's an overflow valve. And what these end up doing is they are self-watering pots, self-watering beds. And last summer, when during the drought, when we needed to water all the rest of the garden, these beds never needed watering.
Wow.
And everything grows just lushly in them. And then we make compost and add compost to the soil each year. But they're relatively, you know, they're relatively easy to make. And you could go, and you can go any height you want to.
Yeah.
These end up being about 4 inches above my knee, which is a comfortable height for us to work at standing up. But if you wanted to go higher, you could go higher.
Easily go higher.
Yeah.
That's really cool, Stella. Do you have any photos of that?
We don't have any photos, but just a second. Let me ask Rick, could you make...
You know, it'd be great if you could take a photo and post it up on our Facebook page so people could see it.
Okay, could we email it to you? Because we're not on Facebook.
You can email it to us.
Okay.
No problem there, and then we'll post it up on Facebook.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. John, you were going to comment.
Oh, just a couple things based on what she said. I would, if I was going to use pond liner, I'd be tempted to poke some holes just so that you did have complete drainage out of that system, so you don't have things stagnating in there. And then she also mentioned using treated lumber for the raised beds, and I'd be careful about what type of treated lumber you use and making sure to do your research and making sure that that treated lumber isn't going to cause problems.
Yeah, good points as well. Thanks again, Stella, for calling. I appreciate it very much. Sandy in Appleton has a question. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, it's going to be a brief one. I came into the kitchen one day and I saw a sweet potato with a little root growing up in the air, little feeler thingies.
Yep.
And I chopped it up and put it in two large yogurt containers with drainage gravel in the bottom. Well, it didn't do too much the first 2 weeks, and all of a sudden it just went nuts, and that's crawling all over my lamp and all over the walls. And I felt so bad. I was talking to this little one. He's a real fast runner, and he's wound all over the place, and there's little leaves coming in. And I don't know if I bumped it or what, but the first 2 inches, I must have bumped it because it got all dried up. I'm trying to save it. it's so tiny, and I got it soaking in a little thing of water here, hoping to revive it. But what I'm wondering is this. I've never grown sweet potatoes before. I've grown many other things, but I don't know what I'm going to be finding once I dig up what's in the dirt there. I'd like to take both and put them in a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
But what can I... Is it possible to recut what's left, if, like if there's a sweet potato in the dirt. Do you think mm-hmm. it would do okay if I cut it or just leave it?
Well, the way sweet potatoes are grown, they're grown from the shoots that come off of the tuber.
Yeah.
And they're called, referred to as slips. Mm-hmm. And if you order sweet potato slips, you get a rubber band bunch of slips that are, you know, they're rootless. They're bare root. Well, not rootless. They're bare root slips. And when you order them from, I've never actually grown them myself, although as you experience, it's very possible to grow them yourself. But when you order them, you get a bundle of them, and, you know, it's kind of like getting, you know, onion plants or something like that from a garden center. They look all kind of wilted and like they look almost like they're dead, mm-hmm. but they're still alive, and you plant them and they'll grow. And, you know, the vines of a sweet potato, you know, they'll trail all over the place. So if you grow it in your kitchen, it can turn into a fairly attractive house plant.
Well, yeah, it is, but I don't know what to do with it from here and how to be careful to take them out. I've got them in the butter containers, which are sitting in a yogurt container.
Well, if you've got them now, I would just get rid of them. And if you're interested in growing sweet potatoes, I'd wait until this coming spring and then try to start some.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Otherwise,
I wouldn't try to salvage or save what you're dealing with now.
No, no. if you got a piece of a plant that looks pretty good and you want to keep it around, keep it around, but don't expect to get any sweet potatoes. that's the advice from here anyway. Thanks a lot, Sandy, for calling. It's a pretty cool thing you did anyway. I love that. I haven't tried that before. And I've got a sweet potato at home that's got some little roots things coming out of the top. Maybe I'll just experiment myself. Why not?
Give Limey a friend.
Give Limey a friend. That's right. Limey lost his, her friend died suddenly. And so Limey's been alone for a long time now. Mandy in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question about, live in Milwaukee, and I have a small garden in the back of my garage. It's done very well. In the past, it's in two raised beds, but I'm not sure what the name of the tree is. I think it's locust. In the next yard across the fence, there is a tree that's growing, and it gets these, it almost looks like walnuts, these round growths on them.
Okay.
And they will fall in the garden. But I'm wondering if that's interfering with the growing of the garden, because last year, and maybe the year before, I didn't get a very good yield.
Does that tree shade your garden?
No, I had my neighbor take some of the branches off, so no, I get pretty good sun in the garden. But I'm just wondering if, because I noticed on the other end of the yard, this same tree is, there's another tree popping up. So I'm wondering if roots from that tree is maybe getting in my garden.
Well, if it's cool, I mean, there could be roots competing a bit for water and such, which would have an impact. And, you know, of course, we all know about black walnuts problems, being next to a black walnut tree. But this isn't a black walnut from the sound of it.
I don't think it is, but it does get those growths on there kind of that fall. That looks like a walnut.
Well, I would find out what kind of tree it is.
Yeah, for sure. You can do that pretty easily.
Okay, because it's not the sun and it's not water. Because I do have a watering system in the garden, okay. So it gets plenty of water and it gets pretty good sun during the day, especially noontime on.
If you take a sort of a about three or four pictures of the tree, maybe one from a little ways away, and then one showing the bark, and then one with a leaf where you can see the leaves, and you show those to a master gardener or your county extension office, they're going to tell you what that tree is.
Okay, all right.
And or you could probably email email those pictures to the county extension office, and they'll tell you.
Okay. And if it is a variety of walnut, that would interfere with the garden?
Well, if it's a black walnut, you're going to have problems. You're not,
right, especially with tomatoes and peppers and things like that.
Especially with them. And in those cases, then you're going to have to go to something like a raised bed that would protect from the bottom as well, so that the roots couldn't get up in. You need to completely, or maybe straw bales, like I do.
Okay.
I use straw bales, and they grow very well in there, and would grow fine. I think, and
you know, my tomatoes especially didn't do well.
Yeah,
and I always in the past
could be black walnut. Could be a black walnut.
Yeah. Okay, I'll check that out then.
All right, great. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have some pictures. There's a photo on Facebook of a really nice high raised bed. They didn't use treated wood, no treated wood there. And so we take a look at that if you want to see on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Katie was wondering when is the best time to start seeds inside in a kitchen window, and that depends a lot on what you're growing.
Yeah, really depend. You know, it depends on what you're planting, really.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's not very easy to answer that question without more information.
Yeah, that is for sure. John Hendrickson is our guest. John, today he is with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, Program Manager for Fresh Market Vegetables, and Coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. We're visiting the vegetable garden, or at least topics about the vegetables and vegetable garden, with John Hendrickson. John coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers, and they've got their big 3-day school coming up very shortly, as a matter of fact, in just a matter of a few weeks. And you could still get involved in it. And before we go back to the phones, John, let's talk a little bit more about the school again. What's covered, and how do we get involved?
The school is designed for people who want to start a small business growing and selling fresh market vegetables. We have a group of experienced grower instructors that do the majority of the teaching, with some input from some of our fine faculty here on the UW-Madison campus. And we basically spill the beans on, you know, what it takes to do this and make it a profitable business, from the planning stages, what kind of equipment and tools do you need, how much labor is required, how much money can you make, the ins and outs, nuts and bolts.
And you're here at the university, but you also, in your own home, you've got your own market garden.
Yes, I have
business.
My own small farm just north of Waterloo, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and so you learn by doing, as well as all the other ways you can learn, by listening to others. And, well, you know the whole thing. Cheryl in Conover has a question, but Cheryl, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Okay. I'm the one that posted the above ground garden. My husband and I, we made that this summer out of cedar. We didn't use any treated wood because I can't bend down. And I had a vegetable crop of onions and leek and radishes and cilantro and rosemary and tarragon and everything in there.
Well, you know, and thanks so much for posting that, Cheryl, because that's a really cool looking treated wood bed that you put together here.
What did you put
but
in
not,
for?
It's
for,
not treated wood. No.
I'm sorry, untreated. Untreated,
yeah.
Is
untreated,
what I meant to say.
Yeah. And the reason we did that is we have organic farming up here in the Rhinelander area where I have CSA, and I wanted to do this, and the organic farmer said, well, just make sure you don't use treated wood if you're going to do vegetables.
Absolutely.
And so my husband did, we worked on that, and we just had a blast making it. We made a couple more for friends, and I can't tell you how much fun it was, and I did only fill it with dirt.
Okay.
I didn't use the gravel in the bottom. My husband took the drill and drilled numerous holes in the bottom to allow drainage.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be the first winter, so we'll see how it fares over the winter.
Yeah.
You're probably going to want to add some compost to that bin on an annual basis.
Yes. I figured we probably would, because the dirt will get old.
and
how big is that? Is that 2 feet by 4 feet? Or?
Yeah, it's 2x4. And we just, I got tired of bending over in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a perennial garden, but I wanted to start getting my green thumb on growing food, okay? And, you know, I'm a big herb person, and I wanted to see what I could grow in there. And it really gave us some fun stuff, and my grandkids just loved it because they could see the growth. We grew them inside first, then we put them in there.
Yeah, it's...
And it just went nuts. I mean, I literally had to throw some of it away because I had... I threw it out to the deer and whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's beautiful, and it's really a pretty box, too.
Well, he, you know, between my husband and I, we figured it out, and it cost us, I'll tell you, it ran us $170 in wood.
Yeah, cedar wood is it's expensive.
But then we used white pine. We used white pine for the post.
Yeah.
And then underneath it, it's crossed with cedar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the only two products were white pine and cedar, and the posts are the only white pine, and none of it was treated.
Mm-hmm.
And he did crossing, and he used screws.
Yeah.
And he did some double duty on the bottom because he said, gee, if we put the dirt in, that's got to be a yard worth of dirt.
Yeah. So you're looking at a lot of weight there.
Right.
So, well, you have done, Cheryl, this is I hope everybody goes to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. If you get over there, and you don't have to be a member of Facebook to go to our page. So you can just type in the Facebook, the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. Go to the page. Down on the left side, you'll see something called Visitor Posts on the left side. Click on that. And the first thing you'll see, at least for now, the first thing you'll see is Cheryl's and her husband's box with no treated wood, with a lot of vegetables and lots of things growing in that box. So thank you so much for calling. I want to give some others a chance to get in here, but I really appreciate you sending that photo, Cheryl. It's wonderful. Looks like a very successful operation, and I think anybody could kind of figure out from looking at it how to put one together. And Brent in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Brent. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Hi, John. I'm a old alumni from John's class back probably 12, 13 years ago for the Market Gardener class and also the cut flowers. But, John, I'm sure you've probably seen in Growing for Market Pub, they've had a few articles over the years about growing ginger.
Yes.
In the hoop house.
Yep.
And I'm just thinking of probably doing that in one of my hoop houses instead of the tomato cucumbers, and wondered if you knew anybody in the area or that has experience doing it in this location.
There's a lot of people that are starting to do that. And, you know, if you contact me off the show, I could point you to some of those people. I don't want to give people's names out on the airwaves
right.
So that everybody and their brother is contacting them.
Right.
But there are growers that are using that. One important thing to note about growing garlic in Wisconsin.
No, ginger.
I'm sorry.
He
said garlic, so now I'm saying garlic. And I'm a garlic grower, so it's on. You know, it's easy for me to have that come out of my mouth. The ginger it takes a long time to grow, and so the results that you get here in Wisconsin are not the type of ginger that you see in the store. It's young, immature ginger that you're going to be growing. It's
kind of
whitish, pinkish roots, not the one with the tan brown. With the tan brown skin on it, so you have to make sure that you've got customers that are going to understand what that product is. If it's something you're going to sell, or if you're just growing it for yourself, obviously it doesn't matter. But you need to understand that's the product that you're going to be growing, not the not the ginger that you see in the store.
Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot better than the old crusty stuff that's old. You know, this is the young stuff you can eat just fresh.
You can eat it fresh. It's great to use in vegetable juicing if you make juice, juice and things like that. And ginger's got a lot of health-giving qualities as well.
Oh, all right. Well, thanks a lot.
I'll
give you I'll shoot an email off to you, and we'll talk later.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Now, that ginger, I'm thinking right now that I've got to go home, and I've got some ginger. Actually, I have some ginger in the refrigerator, and I've got some carrots. And there's a carrot soup recipe that I have gotten from the show. And it is really, really good. So maybe I'm going to have some carrots.
We're making you hungry talking about the vegetables, huh, Larry?
So maybe I'm going to have some carrot soup tonight with a little ginger, and I think there's some cream that I would have to stop at the grocery store and pick up. But
the basics of growing ginger is it's kind of like growing potatoes. It's propagated from the roots. You get kind of a mother root when you order this. And ordering it can be tricky. My understanding is that because there's a lot of small farms that are starting to grow this, the supply of seed stock is limited, and you have to order early and hope that you your order is filled.
There we go. Paul in Harmony, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Paul.
Hey. Hi, how you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Good. Hey, the lady with the pine needle mulch sparked a question in me. I have access to hardwood sawdust. Is that anything that you could put in your garden that would be beneficial or neutral or bad?
You can certainly, can you add it? Yes. Should you? No, you really probably shouldn't. Sawdust tends to bind up the nutrients in the soil, particularly nitrogen, and nitrogen's the thing that plants need the most of. And so if you put a lot of sawdust in your garden, it's going to bind up that nitrogen, and you're not going to have good results.
But you can pile it and let it sit.
You can add it to compost and it'll be an ingredient in your compost, but you're going to have to add a lot of the nitrogen and green stuff to your compost to counteract all that carbon in the sawdust.
But if you've got a spot for it, you know, you could. That's one way to do it.
Okay,
sure.
Now do blackberries require a lot of nitrogen then?
I don't think.
Not a terrible amount as a perennial plant, but they do, you know, all living green growing plants require nitrogen.
Right. Okay.
I don't know. I'm a vegetable grower, not a berry grower, so I can't give you specific recommendations. What I would do is ask you to contact or look up online some publications about growing cane berries. And
there's actually a good extension publication on
absolutely.
That at the Learning Store. If you go to the UW Extension Learning Store and type in blackberries, there's blackberries and raspberries, I think, in one publication.
And alongside of that, in terms of not only looking up the information, but if you're going to do this in a significant, serious way, you should be testing your soil periodically and finding out what's there before you do fertilizing applications.
Yep, for sure. And thanks for calling, Paul. Bob in Oak Park, Illinois. You know what? Now with an Illinois call, we've had Illinois, Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin. So did we get an Iowa caller?
Yes, we did.
We did get an Iowa caller. So every surrounding state today on Garden Talk. Bob in Oak Park, Illinois, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I've got a question about cucumber varieties. Every year I enjoy growing cucumbers, and then every year the beetles come, and eventually the plants die from bacterial wilt. I've been doing some research. The only variety that seems to be almost immune is County Fair, which is more of a big pickle type cucumber. And I was wondering if you knew of any other varieties that are resistant to that.
How big of a field or how big of a patch do you have?
Oh, this is just along a fence line. So I might put in 10 to 15 plants total, but okay. I'm in an urban area. So even if I get rid of the ones in my garden, the beetles, I think they're coming from neighbors.
Yep. I was just thinking about row covers.
Yeah, I use row covers on my cucumbers, and some of my favorite varieties of cucumbers to grow, because I like to grow under the row cover, are the Parthenocarpic varieties, and what that word means is that it can set fruit without being pollinated. It's self-pollinating.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so I try to grow those varieties so I can keep that row cover on, and I don't have to worry about pollinators not having access to those blossoms for pollination. You got to keep looking in the seed catalogs. Every year there's new varieties, and given the problems with mildews on cucurbits, that's definitely a target for the breeding programs. And so, you know, you should look in all the seed catalogs that you've got access to try to find the varieties that are labeled as disease resistant.
Did you have good luck with any particular varieties this last year, John? Or
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. one of my favorite varieties, having spent some time living in Japan, is a Japanese variety. It's a long, skinny, slender cucumber.
Oh.
And it's called Tasty Jade.
Tasty Jade. Oh, I like that. I like the name anyway. And the tomato, the cucumber is tasty.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah. There you go, Bob.
Real quick, do you grow them on a trellis system, or how do you get enough row cover material to cover the entire plants, or do you keep them on the ground?
Yeah, well, especially because I'm growing this Japanese variety that's a long, slender one. If you don't trellis them, the cucumbers get curvy and curly, and I want them nice and straight for my restaurant customers from my farm. So I'm growing them on a trellis, and then I'm putting hoops over the row and using a really wide row cover so that I can cover that whole trellis system.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. But if you don't care if your cucumbers
don't care, you can do whatever you want, right?
No, but if you don't care if they're curly or straight.
Yeah, no. you can grow them on the ground.
You can grow them on the ground for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Gene in Ashland County. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. For what you're just talking about, if you don't use any pesticides on your cucumbers, can you eat the skins?
Oh,
that's perfectly all right, right?
Yeah,
most certainly.
Yeah, I do.
I don't peel my cucumbers.
Well, I was going to ask, you were talking about ginger, and it was possible to grow some kind of a ginger in our climate. And I read somewhere that ginger and turmeric are botanically related. So could we grow some kind of turmeric also?
Turmeric.
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't either.
And what kind of soils would it require anyway?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. It is a member of the ginger family, and so there's a chance that you could grow that in a hoop house as well. But again,
if you've grown turmeric, give us a call and let us know. And you'll have to do it quickly because we're a little short of time, not completely short. Gene, thanks for calling. Stay listening. We'll see what we can get from somebody else. Jim in Milwaukee, it is your turn. Hi, Jim.
How you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, listen, we got a small garden in the backyard 2 years ago. I tried to do some corn, and we had about 50 stalks of corn. And it was producing really well. It was starting to look really healthy. And we came back from up north, and we had lost I don't know how many ears. And my first thought was a raccoon, but I think a raccoon would have pulled the ear totally off the stalk and took it with them or ate it right then and there. But all the ears remained on the stalk, and they cleaned or whatever it was, and I can only assume that it had made mice. But they cleaned the ears completely all the way down and left them on the stalk.
Yeah, that sounds like white-tailed deer to me.
No, we don't have any deer in the backyard.
They don't? Oh.
No. We're in residential, and I know for a fact we don't have any deer there.
Well, then it could be raccoon.
Wouldn't a raccoon actually take the stalk off or the ear off the stalk?
Not necessarily. At our center at Arlington, I believe I'm trying to remember now. One of the professors who was raising corn there, I think, had raccoons just eat the corn right on the ears.
Yeah, and they just totally just about cleaned me out. And I did set a live trap but to no avail. So
yeah, I
might give it a shot again. And,
yeah, give it a shot again and set some traps, both larger live traps if it's a raccoon, but you also might try, you know, set some, you know, rodent traps as well.
And the best thing and biggest thing you can do probably is get yourself a camera, one of these cameras that hunters use that you can, if you can set one of those out, a game camera, and you'll find out. You'll
what
get
you've
the,
got. Maybe you can borrow one from a
just
friend.
Just borrow
that has one
from a friend. You're bound to know somebody that has one, and just set it up outside. And you'll be surprised at what you would.
What goes on in the garden after hours?
After the lights go down. Oh man, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. Bonnie emailed and said the gardener's supply catalog shows tall raised beds on wheels for people in wheelchairs or who need to, you know, or who need to stand in the garden. So garden supply catalog, that's one problem. There are probably some other garden supply catalogs as well that have a different name than the garden supply catalog that will also have the raised beds. And that's kind of nice. If you've got them on, I don't know, bicycle wheels or something like that, you can move them around. Sometimes if you can move them around to take advantage of light, you know, sometimes the shade, you know,
the shade moves through the day. You could keep your garden.
Yeah. Or just move it to a different spot in the lawn, as the leaves come on and change and so forth. So that's a very good idea. And somebody wanted to know about garlic growing, and actually more than one person, because you mentioned that you grow garlic. And in 1 minute, can you give us some tips on growing garlic?
Oh, okay, the fast course on growing garlic. Well, garlic is planted in the fall, and I like to plant my garlic as late as possible. And that was particularly advantageous this year because we had such a long, drawn-out mild fall. I know people who kind of planted by the calendar, and their garlic actually came up.
Whoa!
And, you know, got 5-6 inches tall, and now it may not survive the winter because it grew. You want the garlic to be able to set some roots in the fall, but you don't want any top growth. So I plant it basically the first week of November before things are too cold, and then it's the first thing up in the garden in the spring. Keep the weeds in control, and then harvest in July.
Harvest it in July.
Yep.
And there are so many varieties.
There's lots of different types of garlic.
So do a little homework on, if you were going to plant one variety, what would it be?
German Extra Hardy, I really like.
German Extra Hardy. And we've got if you want to learn some more about market gardening and market growers, the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers, coming up January 8th, 9th, and 10th at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, cost about $300. And you can find out more if you just go to the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. If you just type that into a search engine, you're going to get all the information you need. You can still sign up. And take advantage of this course, which sounds wonderful. And John, again, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to another visit. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry.
John Hendrickson, who coordinates that Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. Great to have him along, and thank you very much for listening. I always have a lot of fun here on Garden Talk. We'll talk about taxes next Monday on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store.